Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Writing Cabin with Tara Benner. I'm fantasy author Tara Benner, and this is my cabin. We all need to escape into story from time to time. So come on in, sit down by the fire, pour yourself a nice hot cup of coffee, and let's talk books. Now, this week, instead of our usual show, it is another very special episode. I am going to be reading chapter 2 of Better Off Dead because this week is release week. And I'm so excited because if you're listening to this, the book should be available. It's hard for me to do it in my head because I'm actually recording this a little bit early. If you listen to this on the day it comes out, I will have just gotten back from a trip to Santa Fe, and so I didn't want to have to worry about recording the day I got back. But it's release week. Better Off Dead, Mountain Shadow Mysteries Book 1 is now available, so make sure you go grab your copy. It's available in Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. It's also available as a paperback. So very excited about that. This is a very fun series, and so you don't want to skip over this one, especially if you enjoyed Witches of Mountain Shadow. So without further ado, here is the second chapter of Better Off Dead. It had been 5 days since I'd learned that my fiancé was a fraud. 5 days since Todd had cleaned out my apartment and skipped town with all my money. I was on my way to Gran's house in Colorado to help with Aunt Lucille's funeral arrangements. I'd flown from O'Hare to Denver the day before and then rented a car to drive the rest of the way to Mountain Shadow, a tiny town west of Colorado Springs. Rain was coming down in droves as I navigated the winding mountain road. Huge rust-colored rock formations rose up on either side of the narrow highway, but I kept my gaze fixed straight ahead at the bleary set of taillights in front of me. Apparently, July was monsoon season in Colorado, which meant regular rainstorms every afternoon. The windshield wipers of my pitiful rental car were swiping frantically to keep up with the downpour, but it was still difficult to make out the road ahead. My stomach lurched each time the car scooted around one of the hairpin curves, punctuated by jutting sandstone fins. The last few days had been a mess. I'd had to cancel all my credit cards and change the locks on my doors, but there was no getting back the money I'd given Todd for our wedding. According to the police, Todd Polinsky had been an alias, and the account linked to his Venmo profile had already been drained of all funds. He'd likely booked himself a flight under another name and fled the country with all my money. Even worse than being scammed by my fiancé was having to call everyone on our guest list to tell them that the wedding was off. After 6 or 7 grueling phone calls, I drafted a lengthy email treatise and BCC'd the rest of our guests. I hadn't had the guts to check my inbox since I'd left Chicago. Replaying the early weeks Todd and I had spent together, I realized that there'd been signs. I'd just chosen to ignore them. Todd had never introduced me to any of his friends, but he was new to the city and didn't know many people. His parents had retired to Hawaii, he'd said, and he was an only child. I was supposed to meet his parents at the wedding. He'd seemed just as excited to tie the knot as I was, and he'd taken an active role in planning our wedding. I hadn't thought twice about Venmoing him my half of the deposit so he could pay the vendors. I hadn't hesitated to give him my credit card so he could buy our plane tickets. Looking back, I should have. I wasn't the kind of girl who got swept away by romance. I had a 5-year plan and a 401k that I'd intended to fully fund by the time I was 50, and I'd thrown it all away for him. Todd was probably sipping Mai Tais on the beach with our honeymoon money, but his stealing from me didn't hurt nearly as much as my own naivete. On our first date, Todd had told me he had dreams of becoming an actor, and I'd confessed that I secretly wanted to quit my job in marketing to write mystery novels. Apparently, he was also close with his 90-something-year-old grandmother and made a point to call her every day on his way home from work. It was this last detail that really made me fall for him on that first date, but he'd probably spent hours snooping through my social media profiles to figure out exactly what to say to me. Over the last 6 months, we discovered all kinds of little things we had in common. We both loved Thai food and Colorado and old black and white movies. All those romantic coincidences that had seemed like destiny at the time now left a bitter taste in my mouth. The sound of my own pathetic sobs echoed in the car, and I had to slow down to see the road through the haze of rain and tears. Squinting through the downpour, I spotted a brightly colored sign along the side of the road, welcoming to Mountain Shadow. Experience the magic of the mountains. The highway dumped me out on Main Street, and I took a moment to get my bearings. I'd been to the little tourist town plenty of times as a kid, but the streets were still only vaguely familiar as I passed through downtown. The old brick buildings had been converted to shops, bars, restaurants, and apartments. I passed an old penny arcade, a 50s-style diner, an apothecary, a Christmas store, and a coffee shop called Deja Brew. At the thought of coffee, I got hit with an intense craving. I hadn't been sleeping well since the robbery and had subsisted mainly on coffee and non-dairy peanut butter fudge ice cream. Gripping the steering wheel with an almost manic desperation, I whipped the little car around in a tight U-turn and zipped into an open spot. A neon purple sign with an all-seeing eye on a coffee cup beamed through the gloom as I hopped out into the rain and scurried toward the cafe. A little bell over the door dinged as I came in, and the glorious scent of espresso, combined with the general coziness of the place, gave me an energizing lift. The shop was crowded with mismatched tables and chairs painted in various shades of purple. A bulletin board by the door was papered with festival posters and flyers for missing pets, and copies of the Mountain Shadow Gazette rested in a rack by the trash can. I sighed. This place was just what I needed. "Hey," came the lackadaisical greeting of the tattooed barista behind the counter. She looked about my age, maybe 28 or 29, but way, way cooler. She had stick-straight hair pulled back in a careless ponytail, a nose ring, and a giant crystal hanging around her neck. I managed something in the ballpark of hello and shuffled up to the register. "What can I get?" Oh. The barista's abrupt change in tone caught my attention, and I glanced down to check my reflection in the pastry case under the cash register. The shirt I was wearing had a telltale stain from the jelly donut I'd inhaled on the drive. My shoulder-length blonde curls were all frizzed out from the rain, and I had cartoonish mascara tear tracks down both cheeks. To make matters worse, the stress of the sham wedding had been making my rosacea flare up, so my face looked extra red and puffy. Oh, God. I hurriedly tried to scrub the mascara tracks from my cheeks, and the barista handed me a napkin. Rough day? Rough week. The barista bit her lip, taking in my whole situation with something like understanding in her golden brown eyes. "I just found out I was being swindled by my fiancé," I blurted, my throat getting tight the way it always did when I was about to cry. "He stole a bunch of money that was supposed to be for our wedding, robbed my apartment, and skipped town." I drew in a shaky breath and blew my nose on the rough paper napkin. "I'm pretty sure I'm not the first girl he's done this to." "Are you serious?" The barista's eyes bugged out in a mixture of horror and fascination. It was the typical reaction to hearing any online dating horror story, but I detected genuine sympathy in her voice. "Dude, I'm sorry. That sucks." For some reason, it was this sweet stranger's earnest pity that really sent me over the edge. Big, fat tears leaked out of my eyes, and my nose immediately started to run. "I'm sorry," I hiccuped, dabbing under my nose and rubbing away the tears. "I don't know why I just told you all that." "It's okay," she said, reaching over the counter to give my wrist a squeeze. I pulled a wan smile and dried the rest of my tears. I couldn't believe I'd just broken down in front of a random stranger. I glanced down at her name tag. Amber. Her name was Amber, so she wasn't a total stranger. That made this breakdown something of an improvement from the breakdown I'd had on the handyman who came up to change out our locks, the customer service lady from my bank, and the new client at work whose pitch meeting I totally bombed. "Can I get a large mocha with oat milk and an extra shot?" I asked, trying to rein in the last of the waterworks. "Girl, you don't need espresso. You need, like, the opposite of espresso." A little rush of panic flared through me at the thought that my drug of choice might be withheld, and fresh tears welled up in my eyes. "I'm kidding," Amber cried, hurriedly patting my hand. "Oh, I'm sorry. Bad joke. I'm such an idiot. Girl, I've got you. Just one sec." I sniffed and handed over my shiny new credit card. "Thanks." Amber rang me up in 2 seconds flat and started making my latte with practice efficiency. As I watched her pour the milk and tamp down the espresso, my phone buzzed for the 100 millionth time. A deluge of notifications and reminders crowded my screen. 8:30 a.m. Submit revisions to slide deck. 9 a.m. Lucky Chow rebrand brainstorm. 11 a.m. Team meeting. 12 p.m. Lunch with Todd. 2:30 p.m. Phone call with caterer. I also had no fewer than 200 unread messages. Most of them were from friends and family I disinvited from the wedding. The rest were from clients and coworkers. Though, after my little breakdown at the pitch meeting, my supervisor had suggested that I take some time off and come back once I was ready to play ball. I knew what that meant. Either I came back focused, refreshed, and full of brilliant ideas, or I was out for good. I sighed and shoved my phone back into my pocket. I needed to delete any wedding-related appointments. Seeing those reminders felt like a punch to the stomach every time they popped up. "So what brings you to Mountain Shadow?" asked Amber over the whir of the espresso machine. "Oh, my aunt died." She looked up, and something like a spasm passed across her face. "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. You have, like, the worst luck." I shook my head and tried to smile. "It's all right. She was my great aunt. She was 98, so she lived a pretty good life. I'm just here to help my gran make the funeral arrangements and get her estate settled." "That's nice of you." In truth, I wasn't sure if I was doing gran a favor or if it was the other way around. I couldn't stand to stay in Chicago with nothing to do but sit around trolling dating apps for anyone who looked like Todd. I needed somewhere else to focus my energy. I needed a to-do list. "Who's your grandma?" Amber asked. "Virginia McCrithers. She goes by Ginger, mostly." "Why? Do you know her?" I knew Mountain Shadow was a small town, but I wasn't sure if it was that small. Amber snorted. "Everybody knows Ginger." She waggled her eyebrows and handed over my mocha. "You're doing God's work." An unexpected laugh burst out of me, making me forget my misery, if only for a second. I grinned and stuffed a couple of bucks into the tip jar. "Thanks for the drink. I'll see you around." "I'm sure you will," she nodded at the mocha. "I know a junkie when I see one." I shook my head and ducked out of the coffee shop with a wave. The rain had subsided to a cold sprinkle, and I took a left at the intersection and drove up the familiar narrow street lined with candy-colored craftsman bungalows that seemed to be sliding right down the mountain. Gran's house was situated at the end of a dead-end street, painted the same shade of robin's egg blue that I remember from my childhood. It was a one-story house with a big covered porch and dainty gingerbread trim painted white. An orange Ford Pinto with a little American flag on the antenna was parked in the narrow driveway. The yard looked like some sort of a theme park / all-you-can-eat buffet for birds. Stone bird baths, hanging feeders, and whirly rainbow yard ornaments crowded the footpath leading up to the front door. The rain had nearly abated by then, and a few hummingbirds were flitting around the feeders. The sight made my chest ache with nostalgic comfort. Grabbing my purse and my giant magenta Filofax, I headed up the front walkway. The bulky planner might have been old-fashioned, but it was how I organized my life. True, a coworker had once called my color-coding highlighting system borderline psychotic, but seeing things written out and organized gave me a sense of calm. As I picked my way around the garden path, I braced myself for whatever sort of mood Gran might be in. Something had happened between her and Aunt Lucille around the time my grandpa had been killed, though no one in my family would tell me, or even seem to know, exactly what that was. I figured Gran might be having a hard time coping with her sister's death, since she and Lucille had been on the outs. Halfway to the door, I realized I had no client meetings to prepare for and no wedding to plan, and therefore no need for my bulky Filofax. But before I could double back to leave it in the car, the front door of the house burst open, setting the hummingbirds flying. Gran was not a tall woman, perhaps 4'11" in shoes, but she made up for it with the loud clothes she wore. She was resplendent in a red velour tracksuit with sparkly silver stripes along each leg. Her cloud of white hair was somewhat contained by the stretchy band of her purple rhinestone visor, and she was wearing the most enormous pair of wraparound sunglasses I'd ever seen in my life. "Is that my granddaughter?" Gran exclaimed, peering at me from over the top of her sunglasses. "It's me." A wide grin spread across my face, and my whole body sagged with relief. Gran was 6 years younger than Aunt Lucille, but she was still in her 90s. I'd been worried that she'd seem older and frailer than the last time I visited, but she looked the same as ever. "Good to see you, honey," Gran gushed, meeting me halfway and wrapping one bony arm around my waist. I gave her a gentle squeeze around the shoulders, reveling in her familiar perfume of cinnamon, cloves, and clean-smelling shampoo. "We need to get a move on," she said in a brisk tone, pulling out of the hug and fishing around in her purse. "We're going to be late." I glanced down at Gran's dazzling white Skechers, which were what she called her going-out shoes. I frowned. "Late for what?" "We're supposed to meet the attorney who was managing Lucille's estate, if I can ever find a house key." "Oh," I said, feeling awkward. I'd received a message from Aunt Lucille's attorney 2 days before, telling me I'd been named in her will. In his message, the attorney had said he'd mail me a physical copy of the document, but I'd left town before it had arrived, and he'd been in court the day I'd called back to discuss the details of my inheritance. "I need to return the rental car." "Oh, you can do that later. Let's take the Pinto. Snowball likes the Pinto." As if on cue, a little white dog came bounding through the open front door, a West Highland Terrier who, I suspected, lived better than most humans. "Hey, Snowball," I crooned, bending down to scratch him behind the ears. Snowball opened his mouth in a happy pant, and his big pink tongue lolled out. "He's looking good," I told Gran, taking in his glossy white coat and bright brown eyes. "What have you been feeding him?" Snowball hadn't been looking this good on my last visit, and I'd been worried he might not be long for this world. "Lucky Chow and Vienna sausages, mainly. That's Snowball the Fourth." Gran gestured up to her front lawn, where three tasteful little resin headstones shaped like dog bones were lined up in a row. "Oh," I grimaced. "Sorry, Gran. I didn't know. R.I.P. Snowball the Third." Gran nodded solemnly and scoffed to herself. "I don't know what I did with that darn house key." She shut the door and shuffled out toward her car, moving with surprising swiftness for such an old woman. "You'll have to drive. The Colorado Department of Motor Vehicles has kindly requested that I abstain." "From driving?" This was news to me. Gran had always driven herself everywhere, despite her advancing age. "Abstain until when?" "Just until I die," she said cheerfully, opening the passenger door of her car so Snowball could hop in. "I thought you couldn't find your keys." "Just the house key," said Gran impatiently. "The car keys and the ignition." "Gran, you shouldn't—" "I keep hoping someone will steal this old thing so that I don't have to fiddle with selling it," she said in exasperation. "No such luck." Snowball hopped into the back, and Gran lowered herself into the passenger seat with a little grunt of exertion. "You know, back in my day, you couldn't leave the key in an unlocked car on Main Street without worrying that someone might steal it. But young people have gotten so lazy, they don't even want to do that." I snorted and walked around to the driver's seat, pausing with my hand on the door handle. They wouldn't have yanked Gran's license just because of her age, would they? There had to have been some incident that had led to her license being revoked. I decided to ask her about it the next day after her soaps. She was always in a good mood then. "Any idea why the attorney wants to see us in person rather than just mailing the will?" I asked as I climbed into the seat, which was jammed up so close to the steering wheel I had a hard time maneuvering my knees. Gran turned to me and furrowed her brows. "Caroline, I hardly had any idea why Lucille did anything. You may not know this about your great aunt, but she was an eccentric woman." Gran turned back toward the tiny side mirror and adjusted her rhinestone encrusted visor. "Be glad you take after me." All right, that is it for chapter 2 of Better Off Dead. The entire book is now available on Amazon, so please go over and grab your copy. I will see you all next week.